It has been a turbulent decade here in Vancouver, to say the least.
Check me out, y'all.
Halford and Brough.
In your area.
That's right.
About to cause mass hysteria.
Sportsnet 650.
Hughes, a drop. He scores.
I've never seen a young defenseman like Quinn Hughes.
It's halftime.
Horvat with two. Horvat with three. Patrick.
Look at me. I'm the captain.
Hey, it's halftime.
Now Besser off the drift wall. Accepted by Patterson. He scores.
It's halftime.
Playoff atmosphere. Look at the boys go. Crank it up. Let's go.
7:04 on a Thursday. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough for the morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. If you have business assets to sell, email them at sales@ableauctions.ca. We are also brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Straight to the phone lines we go. Very excited to have our next guest on the program. As we do every week, it's Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show. What up, Wish?
How are you?
We're good, thanks. I just finished reading at the break your most recent piece for ESPN.com. Best headline so far: 10 reasons to root for the Montreal Canadiens, I guess. Now, you don't have to give all 10 reasons. I want people to read the article and visit your site, but give us an overview.
Well, I've been struggling to find reasons to get excited about this team advancing. Okay. I've been struggling to find reasons why I want to continue watching the playoffs with this team involved. And so I had a journey of self-reflection. Find reasons to get excited, like, you know, little tiny Cole Caulfield skating around the ice and doing offensive things, or, you know, tapping into my 95 Devils fandom of having enjoyed watching a team that no one wanted to watch and felt that their success could be the quote-unquote death of hockey. But I also reached out to some friends, like Jay Baruchel, our actor-director friend. Yeah. And he framed it this way, which I thought was interesting, which is that this Montreal team is an actual underdog. It's hard to kind of categorize any Montreal team as an underdog because they're basically like the New York Yankees of hockey, you know? Like, their next championship, like, if they won the cup this year, they would have more championship years than the Minnesota Wild have years.
Yeah.
But Jay said that, you know, this is one of the first teams you can remember that is playing unencumbered by the weight of history, and that there's something really pure about that, and that kind of struck me, you know, that this is a team that isn't necessarily tied to all of the other Montreal teams, that's kind of its own animal, and I appreciated that viewpoint.
Wish, I want to talk a bit about the Islanders who eliminated the Bruins yesterday. I think my question is going to be, who looks worse, the Washington Capitals for moving on from Barry Trotz or the Toronto Maple Leafs for moving on from Lou Lamoriello?
It's the Capitals, and it's not close, because the thing about the Islanders is that Lou took over someone else's roster, okay, and made it better, and deserves kudos for that. I mean, he made some very smart decisions. I mean, the Varlamov thing has worked, and the pickups at the trade deadline with Palmieri and Zajac have worked out nicely, and obviously the Pageot trade worked out nicely. But the majority of this team was built by a gentleman whose name is now lost in time, Garth Snow, is the reason why this Islanders team is this Islanders team. Barry Trotz is someone that you don't get rid of over some pithy financial contractual issue. And I know that there's sort of a theory on from Capitals fans that he wasn't like that great and made some bad decisions. And I'm here for that. But I'm also here for the stark reality of the situation, which is that the Washington Capitals spent a couple of years wandering the wilderness with Todd Reirden as their coach when it should have been Barry Trotz, and they might have been able to collect another Stanley Cup.
We've got a poll question this morning. Is Barry Trotz the best coach in the NHL? We've had 400 votes on it, and 72% of our listeners say yes. So I think the respect for Barry Trotz, even in a place like Vancouver, where he's never coached before, is pretty high. I just think of what the Islanders were like as a team before he got there. And by that, I mean they were actually quite fun to watch. But they were horrible defensively, just a mess defensively. And then he gets there, John Tavares has left, and all of a sudden, in terms of goals against, they're one of, if not the best team in the NHL. There has to be something about the coach there.
Yeah, I mean, it's the coach, it's the system, it's the friends that he brings along, like Mitch Korn is goaltending guru to, you know, turn every goalie that's ever played for Barry Trotz into something beyond expectation. But I mean, Trotz said it himself the other day. He arrived in New York and he knew his first mission had to be to teach these guys how to play defense. And when you watch this team, I think there's two things you see. One is that they're so fundamentally sound in their own zone. They rarely at 5-on-5 make a critical error, forced or unforced, that results in a goal. But the thing about them, and I don't know if maybe I just misread them last postseason. I don't think I did. I think they really were kind of boring.
Yeah.
But they're playing a really aggressive brand of forecheck. Mm-hmm. And if you watch that game last night, the first four goals of that game were created off of defensive miscues that all could be credited to the way the Islanders forechecked the Bruins. In three cases, turnovers. In one case, Charlie McAvoy just getting outworked by, you know, a 55-year-old Travis Zajac. So, like, you know, there's something to be said about the way they're playing. And, you know, I dropped a 95 Devils reference already on the show about the Canadiens. I think in some ways the Islanders are more the proxy of it, where they have the ability to take it to you when necessary and cycle in the zone. And my God, they had a cycle for about a minute. Yeah. With less than 3 minutes left in the game last night, protecting a two-goal lead against the Bruins, it was insane.
So you're
Can just shut it down.
That was awesome, and I thought they were going to kill the clock. There was like 2 minutes left. And I was like, and I thought the Islanders fans were going to do the soccer thing where they were going to do the ole every time that another pass was completed.
Take it to the corner flag.
Just stay down there for a while. No, you know what?
It was really cool.
You brought up a great point, because the Islanders were boring in the bubble last year. But
I thought so.
In a very weird way, their game almost got tailored to the surroundings. By that, I mean, with no fans in attendance and a game where you can play with zero emotion, they had the perfect game plan because it was just dull. They just kind of dulled their way to the conference final. And then this year, with the frenzied fans on Long Island and the great home crowd that they've got, all of a sudden this forecheck plays perfectly into that, because it's like it's based on energy and the emotion from the crowd. Like, you can't tell me that they didn't get some juice from playing on Long Island, playing at Nassau. And it's a really interesting dynamic, because I highly doubt that Barry Trotz is tailoring specifics to the surroundings. It just
Matt
seems
Grizzlick is happy that there will be no more Nassau.
He was not good last night.
He was horrible last night. But I think you hit on it, which is that the energy that's created by Nassau Coliseum can't be underestimated in the series. I've been there for two rounds now. It was loud against Pittsburgh. It was, you know, migraine-inducing against Boston, the volume in that place when they get going. And there's such a spirit amongst those fans right now. I think, you know, they should send an edible arrangements to Bruce Cassidy for giving them the New York Saints meme, which was prominent last night, and I'm sure will only carry over to subsequent rounds, where every time the Islanders get called for a penalty or on the penalty kill, they're going to start chanting New York Saints, and it's just hilarious. They were chanting it like at the end of last game as the seconds were ticking down. So the fans in that building are certainly a character in this drama, and it's something that the Lightning are going to have to be cognizant of, but I also think it's something the Lightning are attuned to handle, because this is a team that kind of just knows how to win right now.
We're speaking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You mentioned the word drama there, Greg, and I can't think of a better one to describe the relationship between the city of Boston, the Boston Bruins, and Tuukka Rask, who very may well have played his final game for the Bruins last night in a game where he clearly wasn't 100% and didn't perform particularly well. I know that you were sort of live tweeting when Bruce Cassidy was asked about Rask, and then Rask was asked about his future. And for those that are listening right now, maybe are not 100% familiar, the Roberto Luongo relationship with Vancouver and all the highs and lows and drama, very similar to what Tuukka Rask has gone through in Boston during the duration of his career. Outstanding numbers, tons of accolades, but there's always been this weird dynamic at play, and we've seen it time and time again where, you know, you feel like the fans are really quick to turn on him. I know you've paid attention to this a lot. Where do you think this goes from now between the Bruins and Tuukka Rask?
Well, remind me on the Luongo thing. Was it a situation where the critics felt that he was the reason they lost, but his defenders felt that he was infallible, even giving up four goals in an elimination game? That's kind of where Rask is. It's the weirdest thing. There's no middle ground.
Yes.
Like, it's either you are for him or you are against him in Boston. And, you know, as far as his future, you know, he mentioned that surgery is a likely option for whatever ailed him in this game. He clearly wasn't 100% the last two games. They clearly didn't have the faith in Jeremy Swayman to come in and perform in an environment like that last night, and that's understandable. The real question is, as an unrestricted free agent, like, what comes next? And they like him. I think that's clear. They know what they have in him. He's a known commodity. But he's going to be due a good chunk of money. He's getting up in age, and maybe there are some other options to think about, and maybe there are better ways to dispensate that salary when you look at that Bruins team, and specifically the blue line, and say to yourself, we need to, you know, up this ante a little bit, and we may have some internal solutions and goal.
It's Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We're talking to ESPN's Greg Wyshynski. Wish, there's some TVs in our studio right now, and I'm looking at Mark Scheifele addressing the media. What did you think of his comments? Very upset with the Department of Player Safety, just very upset with the media, just very upset in general.
Yeah, I mean, I want to help him. I think he needs a little bit of help and guidance. He was saying that the Department of Player Safety didn't tell him what he should have done on that play. So let me take a shot at it. Use your stick is the thing that I might have done differently on that play, rather than trying to truck a guy as he's scoring an empty net goal with seconds left on the clock. I'd probably try to use my stick in some way, which actually, I don't know if you guys remember, the Department of Player Safety mentioned. They're like, hey, maybe use your stick.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you're clearly just trying to truck a guy and race from the other end of the ice to do so, which, you know, by the letter of the law, is charging. I know why he's being petulant, and I understand it. He's not a dirty player. And so you got people saying he's dirty or saying this, that, or any other thing. You want to prove yourself, you know, you want to kind of mend your reputation. I completely understand that logic, and I completely understand that motivation. But take some ownership, man. Like, you handed the series to Montreal. there's no other way about it. Like, I know we can talk about, oh, they pay Kyle Connor and Blake Wheeler all this money and yada, yada, yada. We've seen this team now in two different postseasons without Mark Scheifele in the lineup. They all start shrugging their shoulders. They lose the offensive engine for the lineup, and then the whole thing kind of falls apart. And so by taking himself out of 2-3-4, he handed Montreal the series. And I know the argument is like, well, you shouldn't be that thin, or one player shouldn't make a difference. He's the number one center.
Yeah.
He's the guy that makes their top line go, top line which has been one of the top maybe three or four in hockey for the last four or five years. So I understand this idea of like, well, they shouldn't have been this bad. Sure, that's fine, except they built their team around Mark Scheifele being on the ice. Okay,
once,
so if he takes if he takes himself off the ice, then they're not a very good team.
Once Scheifele was done, Connor and Wheeler were also very clearly done. Like, it just decimated that entire top line.
They're not deep at center. And again, like I wrote about in this Montreal piece before I started, you know, smooching their backside and trying to make nice with this team. They're the beneficiary of insane luck this postseason. Yeah. Okay, the Tavares thing. You know, there was a phantom limb aspect of you know, Tavares getting removed from the Leafs lineup, but they didn't feel the pain for three games, right? But then they really felt it when they needed him in the final couple games, especially in that overtime loss. And then they wound up playing a team where Scheifele takes himself out in the first game. So two consecutive series against two different teams that all of a sudden no longer had an advantage in the lineup, in the part of the lineup where the Habs are the weakest. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, these teams come into these series thinking, all right, we've got something they don't have, but then all of a sudden they lose it. So, I'm trying to find reasons to love the Habs in these playoffs and to root for them and be appreciative of them, but I also think that their fans are deluding themselves that they don't think that they were the beneficiary of not only that good luck, but also being in a division where, you know, Calgary, Vancouver, and Ottawa laid down a welcome mat to the four seed in that division during the regular season.
They also got lucky. The Habs also got lucky because Dubois quit hockey. He didn't even play in that series. Like he just left. In all seriousness, like what has happened to Dubois, and what are the Jets gonna do about it?
Well, listen, I've talked to you guys before about this season being anomalous.
Yeah.
And being a weird one for a lot of players, in particular young players. And so I don't want to judge Pierre-Luc Dubois too harshly based on what's happened in a year where things were already weird and then you ended up in Winnipeg, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, who knows what's happening away from the ice. But his playoff performance is very disconcerting because you know one of the reasons they acquired him is because of what he did in the bubble.
Yep.
And what he did in the bubble is he looked like you're kind of like Ryan Kessler-esque level up in the playoffs type performer where he's just doing everything for you. And he didn't do anything for them in the postseason. So I think from that aspect, you have to be concerned. But, you know, you get him for another year, and then you can kind of just figure out what you have with him. I mean, it's good that they didn't acquire him and then all of a sudden throw a 7 or 8 year deal at the guy, which was, you know, would have been a huge mistake at this point.
Do you feel that spending all this time trying to get invested in the Montreal Canadiens, and then, by the way, undoing most of it during this interview, but do you feel that it might just be a grandiose waste of time because they're going to get laid to waste by whoever comes out of Colorado and Vegas?
No, I don't. I mean, I think they're a team. We've seen this before where quote-unquote inferior teams can get locked in. And you know, it's not simply just like Carey Price and hopes and prayers. It's four lines all kind of pulling the rope in the same direction. They've got seven, I think it's 18 different guys with at least a point in the playoffs and like maybe 12 different guys with at least a goal. So it's all kind of coming together. I mean, yeah. And you know, one of the things I address in the column, and it's something that some people have discussed, you know, recently amongst like the analytics community, is this idea of maybe skill is what you need for 82 regular season games, but then it's a different story in the playoffs. And if you don't have a team that has a deep collection of better than average players, then it doesn't matter how many skilled guys you have. I know that's kind of a simplistic take, maybe because we don't have Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews and maybe not Nathan MacKinnon anymore in the playoffs, but there's something to be said for Montreal looking at times really horrible in the regular season, having us all underrate them, mm-hmm. and then coming into the playoffs and being a team that's quote unquote built for it. And if that happens, I mean, I think that's an impressive thing, and I think it's something that I hope teams take. I hope teams don't take the "let's just play defense" part to heart.
Right.
I hope they take the, you know, we need to really maybe address our supporting cast as much as we address our star system.
Okay, one final thing before we let you go. The Habs are going to find out who they play possibly tonight if Vegas can take care of Colorado in an elimination game. We're all hoping for a game 7 here because this series has been so good. We just finished speaking with Merrick. And Merrick had this anecdote where he said someone from the Vegas organization texted him after they went down 2-0 to Colorado and said, "Okay, we got this." And I remember thinking, I'm like, that's a crazy thing to think, but they must have seen something in that series. Maybe Jared Bednar saw it too, because he was the one that kind of railed on his own guys after they lost one game in the playoffs. Are you surprised that this series has gone this way? Or maybe did you see something that kind of unfolded in those first couple of games where you're like, oh yeah, Vegas is more into this than I thought they were?
First of all, it's refreshing to hear that Merrick gave you an anecdote from after 1950. That's kind of refreshing. Good to hear. Yeah. He's really upped his game.
He got it on his rotary phone. It was good. Yeah.
You know, I love the guy. I miss the guy. So
I remember something Tim Horton said.
Yeah.
You know, funny, the 1956 Sarnia Sting had. So,
I don't think there was a 1956 Sarnia Sting.
That was great. That was very
well.
American.
Who knows? I'm an American.
Okay, so go.
The last two periods of game two inform the rest of the series, and I think that whoever was on Vegas that texted him that knew what they saw, which was that the Vegas quickly realized how to exert their will on the series, yeah. and quickly realized how to start D'ing up the MacKinnon line, and you know what. I think the takeaway for Colorado from this series, if they lose, and I do think they're going to lose, I think they're going to close it out tonight, is You played a team that has two lines going really well that can do things on both ends of the ice. You played a team that has two defensive pairings that both can handle the other team's top line. And until you match that, until you mimic that, you may not be a championship team, because the Lightning could do it last year, and Vegas can certainly do it this year. But as currently constituted, I don't think that Colorado can quite do it yet. And I'm not saying that's an indictment of Nazem Kadri as a second-line center, and I'm not saying it's an indictment of whatever the pairing of defensemen is behind Kel McCarr. But, you know, you've got to find the solution either internally or externally. And the other thing about it, too, boys, about Colorado, I wrote their sort of, like, post-mortem in case they lose tonight. The window is closed on this group. They've got to sign Landeskog, they got to sign Grubauer, and they got to sign McCarr, who might be looking at Shabbat money at a minimum. And so the salad days of, oh, we are this cap-friendly group that is meticulously constructed and can fit everybody underneath the cap, like, unless they're pulling some Kucherov magic next year, like, they're going to have to really make some decisions with this lineup, because they need to land three big contracts with this team.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to lose Brandon Saad, who's the pending UFA. They've only got one more year of Kadri, too. You wonder if they commit to him, or maybe, I don't know if they can afford to lose him down the middle, but, you know, they probably a decision to make there.
Hey, but yeah, so, I mean, that the expansion draft looms large, too, because, you know, you could end up losing Nikushkin, potentially, Compher, potentially. You could throw Kadri out there if you wanted to lose him, because he's only got 1 year left before he goes UFA. And then, you know, the defenseman's the real conundrum, because you have to you have to protect Taves, Girard, and McCarr.
Yep.
And that's in the hopes that Eric Johnson waves his no move. So they've got a real pickle of an offseason coming up, which is maybe why they you know, went so aggressive in trying to win it this year.
Well, they've got a pickle tonight, because they need to try and stave off elimination in Vegas in front of a sold-out crowd and the Golden Knights, who are playing very, very well right now. Greg, with that, we'll let you go. Enjoy the game tonight. Thank you very much for doing this, and we will talk again next week.
Thanks.
Greg Wyshynski here from ESPN on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
There's no way they'd not re-sign Landeskog, is there? I haven't seen much discussion of that.
No.
He's their captain. I guess it got to this point, maybe?
Kind of got, I mean, what you're suggesting is kind of like David Backes at the end of St. Louis vibes, where they just ran out the clock and then didn't bring him back. But
David Backes was older then,
but
wasn't he?
You understand what I'm saying. He was the captain. He was the leader. And he was going into free agency without a contract, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he was just dangling in the winter. Now, I can't imagine.
Maybe Backes wasn't that much older. I don't know. Landeskog's 28.
So. I think it's going to be more of a layup for Colorado to bring him back, because Landeskog's just, quite frankly, a better player. But, you know, nothing's easy in a flat cap world. Everyone thinks that the Colorado Avalanche have this great situation going. Nothing's great when the cap's not going up.
I always think about Winnipeg and how everyone thought Winnipeg was loaded for years.
Yeah, you just can't take these opportunities for granted.
Yeah.
You can't say we're going to run it back next year and do the exact same thing or go further, because it just doesn't work like that a lot of the time.
And if you have success, that means your players are more expensive. It's Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Joe Haggerty is going to join us at 8 o'clock to talk a little bit of Bruins. It's good news for Canucks fans, though, because the Bruins were eliminated yesterday. We'll ask Hags, what's next for this team? They've gotten a lot out of the Marchand and Bergeron era. Only one Stanley Cup, but they've been to three finals and they've had a ton of success. Where do they go from here? Do they keep aggressively getting after it? Because they do have young guys like Pasternak and Charlie McAvoy. But will they have Tuukka Rask next year? And Tuukka Rask and goaltending has been a big deal for the Boston Bruins. So they're going to have to find a goalie if it's not Tuukka Rask. We've got some time in the next few segments to dip into the Dunbar Lumber text line. So text in any thoughts, 650, 650. We had one guy that texted in that said he's getting into Dungeons and Dragons. And if we have any advice for that, we do not. So I think that was Steely Jim. Steely Jim, you're on your own. It is the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second.
Ah, Coach D'Amato.
Are you trying to get us fired up?
I just overheard what you guys wanted to talk about in the break, and I felt that was apt.
Al Pacino was a motivator.
He was a motivator, okay.
I didn't care for that movie that much.
Neither did I.
Why? Why do we have to do this?
Did you like it?
Yes.
A lot?
It's a great movie.
Ooh.
It's a great sports movie.
No.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not a great.
You're going to get a lot of pushback
on this.
It's
a sports movie. It's not a great sports movie.
I would take Friday Night Lights over any.
Well, yeah, look, that's a given. That's one of the best. That's
I would
the
take
goats.
I would take Necessary Roughness.
Is it in any given Sunday? You getting any sleep, Dom?
Yeah, I was actually sleeping well
during the show.
Some of the parts in the movie, I thought Jamie Foxx was really good, and the whole Willie Beeman thing was good.
I feel like that would not hold up if I watched it again today. The whole Willie Beeman thing.
Kind of would.
Think so?
Yeah. I mean, it was a little trite and a little cliched, like the aging.
A little cliche?
Right. Like the aging. I mean, it was a good, like it was very reflective of the time, like the aging white quarterback who's the safe and conservative
choice. Here comes the selfish black quarterback.
Who's also exceptional.
Who needs to learn some lessons.
Right. Like
But also, maybe he has some lessons to teach others.
Right. I didn't like, and I thought there was.
Did you ever think about it that way, Dom?
Actually, you know what the problem
think
with,
about it now.
You know what the problem with the movie was it tried to cram in every NFL meme and trope into one, like it was too much, right?
Man, you're overanalyzing this.
We're analyzing a movie.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't like it. Just, it was too much.
You just have to enjoy it for what it is. This is the problem with movie critics. Like a good football sports movie.
But it wasn't that good. Was Draft Day good to you too?
Draft Day is one of those movies that is so bad.
Because you know what's the problem with Draft Day was? Good. Draft Day also tried to cram in a million different storylines.
Yeah, but that's what makes it so funny and fun to watch.
Right, but it's
comical when you listen to the trades. Anyway,
we were doing this because your
intentions were good, but and then it
and
all
then it
got
just went off the rails.
Derailed.
Before
yeah.
you go any further, you have to pay bills.
It's
Able
true.
And Acura.
Yeah, Able Auctions. They are one of the two very fine companies that present this show in the morning. If you have business assets to sell, email them at sales@ableauctions.ca. Also, Halford & Bruff is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. This was supposed to be about coaching.
Yes. So one of the quotes from Brad Shaw.
Two names, not
yeah,
one.
Yeah, not one. But he is the new Canucks assistant coach, and his specialty is defense. And I think we can all agree that the Canucks need to get better defensively if they are going to progress. They cannot just rely on Demko being bubble Demko. They need to get better defensively. And this is Brad Shaw's specialty. And there's an article in the Vancouver Province today that I have tweeted out if you want to go read it for yourself. And he says, at times I've been told I'm too detailed or too finite. Mm. I've gotten better and learned simplicity is a real important aspect. And coaching 5 years with Torts in Columbus is as simple as it can get. He has his trigger points. Now, John Tortorella is a motivator. That is his calling card.
Mm-hmm.
How he motivates you, you can say, I don't know if that's the right way to do it, but I think, you know, save for his 1 year in Vancouver, which was just not a good fit for anyone. I think his teams in New York that I watched really closely, that was a motivated group. And a lot of those guys would, you know, skate through a wall for Torts. Then he goes to Columbus. There's a team that's kind of just like existing, you know, like they're just there. They don't have an identity. They found an identity with Torts, but Torts is not an X's and O's coach. Like he knows tactics and, you know, he talks about tactics, but I think we can all say that he's a motivator. And Now that I know that I knew that Bradshaw was there, but I don't think I knew that he was this defensive specialist or anything, because I was like, I don't really care about the assistant coach in Columbus. But it makes sense now that he was this real details guy working with Torts, who's the motivator. And I bet there were times where Torts told Bradshaw, listen, man, it's hockey. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to wanting the puck, battling for the puck. Don't make it more than it is. In fact, I'd be willing to wager a fair amount of money that when Bradshaw says, at times I've been told I'm too detailed, that probably came from Torts. Yeah. But the discussion that I wanted to get into is, for a head coach, which would you rather?
Okay,
it's a would you rather on a Thursday.
Okay.
Would you rather a great motivator
or
a great tactician?
At the highest level with my team, like if I'm a fan of a team, tactician, and it's 100 times out of 100. Give me a tactician.
In hockey?
Yep, give me a tactician, yep. I think the margins are so small at the NHL level that if you're looking for something to get you over the top, I'm going to go with who can put together a better game plan as opposed to who can fire up the boys more than the other guy, especially in the playoffs. I looked at what Chelsea did, and I know I'm going to the football, but yeah. If you look at Chelsea's turnaround from when they got rid of Lampard and they were nowhere and brought in a tactician in Tuchel and then went on a run that culminated with winning the Champions League, I think that's proof in the pudding that when you're talking about the best of the best, the highest of the high caliber guys, and the most talented players on the planet, the lines and margins are super small. So I would go with a guy that is going to be able to navigate our way to victory tactically as opposed to screw the X's and O's, boys. Let's get out there and let's give it some fire. Because the other team's
I'm not talking about screw the X's and O's. I'm just talking about like...
Right, but we're making this a very would you rather. So if you're saying one or the other...
I'll take the motivator in hockey. I'm not surprised that you went the soccer route because you coach soccer and...
Oh, I would take it in hockey too.
But I think hockey is a far more simple game than soccer and a far more simple game than football. And I think a lot of the times it gets down to motivation.
We just finished. I mean, what would you consider Barry Trotz, a motivator or a
tactician? That's why I got into the discussion with Merrick about, I think Barry Trotz has to be both. Because I think in order for his players to buy in to his system, which is not run and gun, it's not exactly fun to play. I don't know if a lot of players would choose to play that. It's difficult. It takes some sacrifice. You got to be blocking a lot of shots. You got to be checking players, and checking players sometimes hurts. Mm-hmm. You need to be a motivator, and you need to motivate your players in order to play this system.
Is the greatest
motivation, a chicken and egg thing, right?
Is the greatest motivation not the result, the victories, the wins, the fewer goals for? Barry Trotz might not have to say anything. He might just be able to go in there and drop the NHL standings on the floor and say, we are now the best defensive team in the NHL, and we are now back-to-back conference finalists. It may not be. I mean, I understand what you're saying, is that at a certain point you're going to need to get that buy-in before the results come.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's very clear that the number one job Barry Trotz has done with the New York Islanders is probably not motivate them, but more change a team that was the worst defensive team in hockey into the best defensive team in hockey with largely a lot of the same cast of characters.
Yeah.
Now,
I mean, it's a good debate to have. I think you need both.
Ideally.
I think you need both, and you'd like to have a head coach that's both a great motivator and great tactically.
Mm-hmm.
But, for example, if you were to ask me what kind of coach Travis Green is, from the publicly available information, and this I might be completely off on this because I don't know what goes on behind the scenes in the Canucks, I think he's a motivator. Like, if I had to pick one, is he a motivator or a tactical coach? I think he's a motivator because that's what he talks about. He talks about how he motivates his players, and he has quotes like, sometimes you got to lean on guys, and other times you have to not lean on them. You have to show them support. And he often talks about how coaching players today, you have to motivate individuals in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the reasons maybe that they brought in Brad Shaw is because they felt that him and Nolan Baumgartner,
I would agree. I know where you're going.
Could
and I
use
agree.
Some help from a details perspective, or not even help. Travis Green would have said it himself. Maybe just some fresh ideas, a fresh voice, a guy who's been in the league for a long, long time, coaching in a specific role.
Someone just texted in, Bruff would take Dan Campbell over Bill Belichick. A bit extreme, but it's funny, too. For those that don't know, Dan Campbell is the new head coach of the Detroit Lions.
Yes.
And his press conferences have largely been marked by, we are going to win football games because we're going to be meaner and tougher and nastier than the opponent. We're going to chew their leg off. And I think he wants a pet lion around the facility.
The kneecaps. I remember kneecaps.
Eating
being
a kneecap.
Big thing,
yeah. And it's, I mean, you kind of roll your eyes, but his goal as a head coach, and he could not be more committed to the bit, is it the only way we're going to have success is if we, for lack of a better term, are more motivated than our opponents. We want to run through things that the opponents won't run through.
Yeah.
Belichick is Belichick.
But that might not work. Like, you can say he's a motivating head coach, but your shtick has to work.
Exactly.
Right? And I don't know. That might just be too obvious, right? And we'll see. We'll see how he works out. Now, Bill Belichick, is he a great tactical coach? Obviously.
Yeah.
Like, he's a brilliant, especially a defensive mind. He's a brilliant schemer.
But he's not a rah-rah guy. He's not a rally the troops
guy. I'm pretty sure he knows how to motivate guys.
But you know how he motivates guys?
Fear.
Well, also, it's very reminiscent of Ken Hitchcock. Is Ken Hitchcock figured it out that the one way I can unify my guys and rally them is make them all hate me. And that's it. And he said it all the time. And Belichick says the same thing. If you are an a-hole to everybody, it does work. And Torts does this sometimes too, is that if there's a lack of harmony and there's angst in the room, it works sometimes because it's us versus them, it's players versus coach. Hitchcock's regarded as one of the best tacticians in NHL history, right? Maybe not necessarily the greatest motivator, but he figured out that I can rally the guys if they all hate me. He's talked about it numerous times. You grind guys down and you know, you're harping on all the same guys. So what's their common bond in the room? Man, Hitch is an a-hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he is. I think Belichick does a lot of that as well, right? That divide between players and coach. And how do you really hammer at home? Well, you're kind of a dick to them. That's an interesting way to motivate. And I don't think it has a lot of shelf life. I think it burns out pretty quick, which is why Hitch doesn't really last.
Well, you say you've just compared him to Belichick. And Belichick lasted a while.
But that's the football and hockey difference, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, football is also the churn. Is that when you eventually a player tunes you out, what happens? I get rid of that guy and I move on to the next player. The only guy that really stood the test of time in New England was Tom Brady.
It's funny. I go back and forth on this in my mind because I remember when Torts was coaching here in Vancouver, like one of my the biggest criticism was a tactical thing. I thought the Canucks played a brutal style of hockey for their team, right? Like I thought Torts was trying to, what do they call it? Like pound in a square peg round hole. Like I thought that was the main problem. I thought they played really slow. There are so many D to D passes. I was like, come on guys, let's go. Like, let's get after it. I wasn't exactly sure what they were trying to do. And it looked at times like the Canucks weren't exactly sure what they were trying to do. And then it all kind of fell apart.
Yep.
But then I also have these times when I feel like we're making way too much of hockey is generally a pretty simple game. It is. Compared to soccer, where there's 11 players out there, compared to football, where there's a lot more players on the field and things can get more complex because there are more players. Oftentimes, hockey does come down to just commitment. And it's hard.
I disagree with that because you're talking about the sport in itself. But in terms of the deployment and the shuffling of lines, it's far more elaborate than the three substitutions that a football manager has during a match. I mean, you're constantly tinkering and constantly trying to find things within the game. When we talk about the three centers for the Vancouver Canucks, for example, we always have to point out that just because you deploy JT Miller as one of the three centers on occasion, it's not written in stone at the beginning of the game that wherever he starts the game is where he finishes the game. You move guys consistently and thoroughly throughout a game to the point where Willie Desjardins, as the Vancouver Canucks head coach, was, all due respect, largely laughed at because it was so simplistic in the way that he deployed lines and deployed players. Rule four was quite literally what he did.
You don't think soccer is more complicated than hockey from a tactical perspective?
When you get to the match, there's not a lot the manager can do once the opening whistle blows.
Just because of limited substitutions?
You have three changes you can make.
Mm-hmm.
You can maybe move players around the pitch and change your formations mid-match. But the reality is, it's mostly about the preparation and what you do ahead of time. Your selection for the starting 11 prior to the match is hugely important.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about Pep Guardiola, what he did in the Champions League final. But once you make that selection, you kind of say, okay, here we go.
Will you at least admit that football is far more complicated?
Yeah. I mean, now we're talking American football.
American football, yeah.
American football is why they have 97-man coaching staffs.
And also you see the head coaches like, I live in my office.
Yeah, sleep 3 hours a night.
I might be married. Yeah. I don't know.
Right.
I haven't seen my family in years.
We all collectively have terrible home lives. Like that's a big part of it. Okay, this is a tough transition into buying alcohol, but we'll try it anyway. BC Liquor Stores, for one day only, visit BC Liquor Stores on June 12th. That's 2 days from now. It's a Saturday. You can save $10 on a 24-pack of White Claw variety cans. It's on sale for just $39.99. I will remind you to please enjoy those White Claws responsibly. Lots more to get to. Guess what? We have another nub segment coming up. Everyone loves a nub, especially producer Dom. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. This is when you gotta let breathe. I know we're in a nub segment, but the real good part doesn't kick in for a little bit here.
It's gonna take a long time. It won't kick in for a while, so just do your read.
Okay. Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. If you're closing your business and you're not sure what all your assets are worth, let Able Auctions help. They've been helping BC business owners wind down and sell their business assets in an orderly manner for over 30 years. Whether you're a complete manufacturing plant, a restaurant, or a mechanical shop, Able Auctions has seen it and done it all. Email sales@ableauctions.ca and get your free of charge confidential consultation scheduled today. That's sales@ableauctions.ca.
Shout out to the Rye guy who texts in, "Wow, Jason, your take that hockey is more simplistic than soccer might be the worst take I've heard on this show." Rye guy, you must not tune in very
far worse takes.
That might be my burner.
Yeah.
I didn't agree with it.
Dom, what would you say? What's a more complicated game? Hockey or soccer?
Hockey.
Really?
Yeah.
There's 11 players on the pitch in soccer.
That doesn't matter.
It's not like foosball. You don't get to control them at all, really.
All you got to worry about in soccer is diamonds.
Diamonds?
Triangles and diamonds.
Triangles and diamonds. That's it.
Okay. I mean, hockey, to me,
you're allowed to have your own opinion.
No, I know.
You don't have to have ultimate agreement. I know you like having...
It's weird, though, because you guys are the soccer players, and you think it's more simplistic than hockey, but you guys have never played hockey. I'm the hockey player. And maybe I've never really played soccer.
Maybe you just answered your own question. Maybe you need to play it to really experience it. The freedom and the simplicity that you have when you're playing hockey, right? You're so free.
I just know that there are certain things that when my team is playing well,
mm-hmm.
and granted it is not a high level, but when we're playing well, we're willing to do the little things that we're not willing to do when we're playing badly. It really is. And now, granted, again, I really don't like going down this.
You're going down it,
I
though.
Don't the,
in the
this line.
Segment.
Because we're not playing, like, there's no system. We don't have a system, right? But, like,
drive that nub.
I just think, in having spoken to hockey players after games a number of times, like, they're not talking about, well, we made a tactical adjustment here and things automatically turned around.
I suppose the answer would be, how many soccer players have you talked to post-match?
Can I?
It could be just as simple, right? Who
knows? There's an oversimplified, like, reasoning for what
all sports are simple and you guys are stupid.
If you just play to the fundamentals of your sport, you're going to play well. It doesn't matter if that's hockey, soccer, football, basketball. And the fundamentals of each sport are relatively simple. So by that logic, hockey is a simple game because if you just stick to the fundamentals.
And the fundamentals is want the puck more than the other guy?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a hockey player. I'm not a hockey player.
Finish, what's the fundamentals of soccer?
Finish more. Finish the game.
Always go down when you feel contact?
We're talking about soccer still?
Yeah.
I know we're out of time now. I wanted to triple down on my any given Sunday take. And I want to.
We have a whole hour and what we learned.
I know. Not only. Here, I'll just throw it out there before the break. I'll throw a Halford bomb out there. Not only is it not a very good movie, it's not even a top five football movie. Not even a top five football movie. Halford Bruff, SportsNet 650.